Rick Mahn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, he is locked and he is loaded, and this is TNT. I am Rick Mahn. All of the above is true and correct as far as I know it. And whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, we hope it's nice, lawful, legal, edifying, and all that business. Hope you enjoy what's coming. Hope you've enjoyed what came before, and I hope you enjoy what's going to be coming afterwards, because we aim to be a constant stream of brilliance here on TNT, educating, entertaining, enlightening, and enthralling you 24/7, 365 days a year. And in fact, even on the leap years, we work on February the 29th, because that's just how we rule here on TNT. So yeah, action-packed show ahead. That goes without saying. First guest today, chap called Nick Margerison, or Margerison, I hope I've pronounced it right. He's an old media guy, in his own words, and an ex-radio broadcaster. He used to work for LBC, and interestingly to me, Kerrang, that means metal. So I'm not sure what we're going to be talking about exactly this morning, but undoubtedly, we'll be talking a little bit about, you know, maybe a little bit of hard rock, maybe a little bit of metal mixed in with everything else. Looking forward to talking with Nick. End of the first hour, Basil has been ousted from his position of political editor. Yes, that's hot off the press, and he's being replaced. You heard it first here by Rex Patrick, transparency warrior over in Australia, just for today, mind you, just for today. He's going to be talking to me about developments and the fallout and the aftermath of the, not the Assange business, the David McBride business that I was reading up on last night. The more I read, the more depressed and angry I got. So hopefully Rex and I are going to be able to delve into what the future might hold for David, appeals, etc. The reaction in public, what it has been to this ruling. That's in the first hour. And of course, Gemma's going to be talking to me in just a minute. Second hour, I'm going to be talking with David Griffiths, he is the Heritage Party Scotland coordinator and candidate. Going to be looking at what's happening in Scotland. Apparently, they've declared a housing emergency, a national crisis for housing in Scotland at the minute. And the word on the street is Nicola Sturgeon's been putting out cryptic posts on her social media platform this morning that she might be arrested imminently. Imagine that, wee nippy. In handcuffs, being led away to the cells. Can you believe it? So we're going to be talking about what's happening in Scotland with David. And then at the end of the second hour, Ben Pyle, my chum, is going to be joining me. Ben's an absolute legend. And we're going to be talking about, usually we cover the old climate, EV scam, and of course, UK politics. So that is all to come. Do you know what I'm going to do? I've got a few things that I was going to just rattle off solo here, but I like to talk about things with Gemma. So we'll take a little sweeper break and then we'll bring her in, and we're going to talk about lots and lots and lots of stuff. So stay tuned and see what's on the cards here on TNT, today's news.
Connecting the dots, painting the bigger picture.
They always have great conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm not going to lie here. I'm starting to become slightly obsessed with the royal family for all the wrong reasons, Gemma, for all the wrong reasons. When they were all healthy and doing their business, I wouldn't have paid them the time of day. But so much weirdness, and this is the key, weirdness is happening in and around them now. And it's not a distraction, okay, because it's not actually distracting me from anything. But I'm interested, I'm curious as to what the hell is going on. So I'm sure you've seen it, but Charles's portrait, his first official portrait, has been revealed. Is it just me, or is that Satan in a hellish background? The only thing missing is his a pitchfork and two horns, and they've even got the fingers wrong. They're not sausages. They're like these little spindly, spiny claw things that he has. What's going on with that portrait, Gemma?
Well, you and millions of others are asking that very question, Rick. What is going on with this? And I was discussing this with Sonia Poulton on the UK TNT Breakfast Show, because what is going on with it? And if you think about the symbolism in that portrait, a monarch butterfly. Now, the links between monarch butterflies and MK Ultra mind control mm-hmm. is established. It's not some mm-hmm. weird conspiracy theory. People can go away and do their own research on MK mm-hmm. Ultra mind control, monarch butterflies, what that actually means. The red, which many people have linked to Dracula and horror and Satan. There are some amazing comparisons on social media, really well drawn comparisons, not some tinfoil hat nonsense, you know. And it's the first official portrait since the coronation. So he's setting his stall. He's saying, this is me as king. This is me as the representation of the UK, of England. This is what we are. It's very deep, very deep.
You know the way we're seeing, Gemma, so-called humiliation rituals in public now, where we see these so-called celebrities and they're made to dress up like ballerinas or they're made to look like absolute gimps when they go out in public now. That's not something I believe anybody in their right mind would willfully want to do. So the word on the street is that, you know, in payoff for their position, you know, they have to be publicly humiliated. Now, here's the thing with this Charles portrait. So we're looking at this from a little bit of a different angle. If this was just something a fan had done, you know, and put it up on the internet and, you know, here's my interpretation of Charles, that's one thing. But there was a great revealing of this in one of the palaces, wherever it was. At Buckingham Palace. And this is the actual report. The first official painted portrait has been unveiled at Buckingham Palace. So it was a big ceremony. And this thing was yanked down, this big black tarpaulin was pulled off, and then this demonic scene was thrust upon us. And this is how it's described. A vast oil and canvas shows a larger than life Sean Connery impression of King Charles in uniform of the Welsh Guards. Now, listen to this. The vivid red work, measuring 8'6" by 6'6" is by Jonathan Yeo, who also has painted, guess who? Tony Blair, funnily enough, old Mephistopheles himself, Sir David Attenborough, and some has been called Malala Yousafzai. I don't even know who that is, but listen to this. This is the most telling comment of all. Queen Camilla, okay, is said to have looked at the painting and said, "You got him. This is him." Was that not the most telling thing of all? Yeah, that's him, all right, the demonic imp.
Absolutely. And also, very well done, you've alluded to Jonathan Yeo, the artist's globalist connections. If you go onto Jonathan Yeo's website, the artist that painted this portrait, it's like mm-hmm. a who's who of the globalist agenda. Mm-hmm. So clearly, the palace was very carefully orchestrating this, as it orchestrates everything, as we've seen in recent weeks with the cancer narrative of the Charles and Kate. And this is the grand unveiling, the first portrait as king. He's telling us, you know, I am who I am, the monarch mm-hmm. butterfly, the red, the satanic imagery, the fact that the face is the only clearly thing defined, everything mm-hmm. else is coming out of some netherworld. Mm-hmm. It's an incredibly powerful portrait. I do think that the reaction of the world was literally, you know, the gut mm-hmm. reaction was what on earth?
Yeah, WTF.
But it's what they want.
That was
absolutely
the gut reaction.
The gut reaction, yeah.
Here's another interesting little statement, and you can read into this what you like. Okay, so this guy, Yo, said, unveilings are always a little nerve-wracking, both for the sitter, i.e. Satan himself, Charles, and the artist, but particularly when one of them is a king. Then he joked, or was he joking? He said, if this was seen as treasonous, I could literally pay for it with my head, which would be an appropriate way for a portrait painter to die, to have their head removed. Is that something that you would joke about, having literally a decapitation? I'm getting visions of The Omen. Have you ever seen The Omen? You know, when the photographer keeps developing the film and there's a black light through his neck, and then he gets decapitated by some sheet of glass. Yeah. The reporter, yeah. I don't know who it was. That's what I'm saying. This guy going, oh, I could literally lose my head for this. Imagine a couple of weeks from now and said, you decapitated in sinister car crash. I hope it doesn't happen. But listen, maybe he's telegraphing something here. Maybe he's not, but it's very bizarre. Very bizarre.
It is. And also, why would you say that? you know, why would you say that? And as if the palace hadn't had a hand in what the image that they wanted to present. I mean, as if it's not been completely controlled, he will have been given a brief. He will have been given a kind of this is what we want.
He sanctioned it. And in fact, there's another picture of him shown under this article here done by Ralph Hymans of the Prince of Wales as he was in 2018. So it's like an old master's painting, you know, the light's perfect and he's sitting in a great pose and he's wearing his tweed jacket. He's got the sausage fingers, all of it very, very accurate. So Charles would have signed off on that, Gemma. There's no way he unveiled that thing yesterday without having any inkling what it was. He knew what was being revealed and he knew what was being portrayed and he sanctioned it. That revealing yesterday in Buckingham Palace was a thumbs up of actively saying yes, and Camilla saying, you've got him. Yes, you've captured the essence of the man. What a thing for your wife to say. Imagine that. You've got him and he looks like a devil from the seventh level of hell.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Rick. And I do think particular attention, while we draw this one to a close, should be on the Monarch butterfly. Their links with MK Ultra, Mind Control, the CIA program. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's a complete documented fact. There is a lot in that painting that we should be very afraid of moving forward with him as our head of
It would make a really good death metal album cover. Actually, I used to listen to a lot of death metal back in the 90s and all the album covers were exactly like that. They were exactly like that. And that wasn't a good thing, by the way. They were very evil and wicked bands. But anyway, enough about old Charlie Boy, or should I say Beelzebub. And let's talk about some breaking news. What's happening on the news frontier this morning in the UK and Ireland?
Quite a lot. I mean, I think we saw this one coming. But of course, the news in Ireland this morning is that yet another migrant tent camp has sprung up along the side of Dublin's Grand Canal. Nearly 60 tents are there now. There were 40 yesterday. And that's just a week after, not even a week after, just 6 days after the multi-agency clearance program to clear two sets of tents on either side of the canal last week. Another one's now sprung up. And also moving over to France, we don't normally go too much into Europe, but a suspected drug boss named The Fly is at the center of a police manhunt. He escaped from his prison van yesterday. Mohamed Amra was traveling from court to jail, the drug boss, when he was ambushed by a motorway toll booth by some gunmen wearing balaclavas. He was sprung, basically, out of his prison van. And now hundreds and hundreds of French police officers are running all over France trying to find this guy. Whether they will or not remains to be seen. And it's also emerged that millions of litres of untreated sewage were illegally dumped into what you could argue is England's most famous lake, Lake Windermere, in the Lake District. Uh-huh. United Utilities failed to stop the illegal pollution back in February and didn't report it to the Environment Agency for at least 13 hours. That's reports out today. The state of our waterways in the UK, Rick.
13 hours. I'll tell you what happened during those 13 hours, Gemma. I'll tell you what was happening, being a little fly on the wall, putting myself. There was a lot of, let's probably say, raw sewage flowing around in the boardroom when that one happened. And they were thinking, why am I going to wangle my way out of this? And they thrashed it out for a good 13 hours. And when they realized there was no way on earth that they were going to cover that up, then they lifted the phone and did the right thing. What a bunch of rotters, eh? Untreated sewage pumped into Lake Windermere, 13 hours. And imagine the amount of damage that was caused in those 13 hours. If they had have just admitted this when it first happened, like, why would you wait for 13 hours before you would notify anybody about that, knowing that every hour that sewage was in that lake, it was going to be causing damage? These people should be arrested, surely.
Absolutely. And many people now, so many campaigners against the water companies, all of whom actually are owned by foreign investors. BlackRock, Vanguard are in there, lots of Chinese companies, Canadian pension funds, basically anybody that's not British is now, you know, big corporate conglomerates running the UK water system. And you're not caring at all. The very fact that companies called United Utilities, nothing to do with British Water, English Water, Northwest Water, where the Lake District is, and also the fact it's Lake Windermere. You would have thought they would have done everything in their power to clean that up as quickly as possible. You know, it's Windermere. It's epic. It's part of our culture and poetry's been written about it. It's Lake Windermere. But no, they thought they could get away with it, or it's incompetence. They just didn't know. we give them the benefit of the doubt. They didn't know it was even happening, but they should do. I think it's probably what you're saying. Can we cover this up? Can we pretend this will go away? No. Okay. Hands up. Let's just, you know, phone the Environment Agency. Let them clean it up whilst we reap in the shareholder dividends.
Oh, my goodness me. United Utilities, isn't that the name, was it? Millions of tons. They should be fined 10 quid for every ton of raw sewage that went into Windermere, or even more than that, that should come straight out of the director's pockets at the very, very least. This is ridiculous. And that's one of the few places I was up there in the Lake District. That's actually where they're holding that music festival, isn't it? That's in the Lake District. That's at the end of May. Hopefully that won't get cancelled. I've been hyping it up now for the last 3 weeks. Solid. Imagine if this story resulted in the cancellation. So hopefully that festival, and you can check the details, by the way, on the website, tntradio.live. Stand in the Light Music Festival, Lake District, 24th to 27th of May. Hopefully this story will not impact on the music festival that is to come. But thank you, Gemma, for bringing those stories to our attention. We'll maybe look back at the old migrant camp. They ever, like mushrooms, they're just springing up everywhere. You can't get rid of them, it seems. It's mushroom season over by the Grand Canal. And I have pictures of the fences that have been erected either side of that canal now to protect people. Oh, it's bad. It's crazy. But we'll go into that in detail in the second hour. And yeah, what a start to the morning it's been. And thank you for your input, Gemma. And I'll be back after this short break. And I'm going to stop saying, that's when you can tell I'm not prepared. I go, So I'll be back shortly here on TNT. Don't go away.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. We don't rock. We talk. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Yes, TNT, Today's News Talk, or Tri-Nitrotoluenes, it's also known amongst the metal fraternity, famous, of course, immortalized by AC/DC in their song TNT. And my next guest, I feel there's a little metal flowing through his veins, Nick Margerison. He describes himself as old media. He's ex-radio. And all I could see when I looked at his blurb and I looked at his bio was Kerrang! Radio Kerrang, my friend. Big fan of metal myself. I take a GR2. I'd be very disappointed if you said you weren't.
So, hey, man. I've got two audio feeds in my ear at the moment. So
Two? Are you sure?
Yeah, it's a bit strange. You're on a slight delay, I think. I don't know why that is. Oh, there we go. I fixed it. There we go. That was my
good
comment.
Good man. Tell me about the music.
Yeah, music. Well, music is my first love. It'll be my last. And you're right. I worked at Kerrang Radio. And when I worked at Kerrang Radio, I did a late night talk show. And that talk show was mainly preoccupied with the fun stuff of conspiracy theory, which is how we saw it at the time. And so we would do interviews with people who would tell us that UFOs are real and governments are covering it up. So we spoke to a guy, Edgar Mitchell, who told us that was the case, and we were all astounded, whereas now, of course, that's the sort of thing you read about in the news. We spoke to a guy called David Icke, who you listeners may be aware of, who believes the world is controlled by shape-shifting reptoids from Zeta Reticuli, I think. And they live in the lower fifth dimension, which means they have a different relationship to time. Great stuff, very entertaining, and essentially, indulging our love of science fiction a little bit at the time. However, in the modern world, that's changed, hasn't it? And we now live in a world where what was laughable is now, and there were hearings at the Senate about the UFO or UAP story not so long ago. And one of the sort of central planks of David Icke's theory was that these shape-shifting reptoids ate children and used the rituals that they had to join these organizations as blackmail material for people who were getting involved. This was before the story about David Cameron and his activities with a pig's head. So this now is news, right? This stuff has come from the fringe into being news. And
yeah, you know, it's
a very strange world in which we live. And when I was chatting to your producer, one of the things that came up in our conversation is a recent interview that was done on the Doc Malik Honest Health podcast. And it's with Andrew Bridgen talking to him, who is an MP. Now, you know, Andrew Bridgen's not entirely unswayed by what some people would say was slightly more fantastical conspiracy theories, but equally his stance on vaccines and stuff like that does seem to be, to a certain extent, being vindicated. So I don't know how you take these comments, and I thought I'd put them to you and we could have a little chat. Maybe you could throw it over to your listeners as well.
Well, for what sure. You say, I mean, Just before you actually came on, I don't know if you heard it or not, but I was saying about we were looking at in disbelief the unveiling of the new portrait for Charles. Yeah. I'm sure you've seen that yesterday. It happened at Buckingham Palace. Now, in and of itself, it's not a newsworthy event. It's a picture of a monarch, okay, first. But the symbolism in that, Nick, is unbelievable. And I actually joked with Gemma just before you came on. I said, you know, back in the day when I used to listen to a lot of death metal, you know, a lot of bands like Carcass and Bolt Thrower and Morbid Angel and all these bands, they all had very horrific, Death was another band, they all had these very horrific, hellish album covers. And that portrait yesterday of Charles, I don't know if you've seen it or not, would not look out of place on a death metal album cover. And the fact that he sanctioned it, and the fact that he's went along with it, and the fact that it portrays him as being a devil, effectively. And he says, yeah, his wife said that's captured the man perfectly. Could you have seen a portrait like that even, you know, talking about how things are working their way into the mainstream consciousness? Could you have seen a portrait like that ever seeing the light of day any other time in history but now?
Well, yeah, I mean, I heard that conversation that you were having, and I've seen that picture. I think I saw it yesterday, was it revealed? And it looks like a head floating in a sea of blood. And the thing about this stuff is that, look, one of the ways in which I would define sanity is the ability to tell the difference between fantasy and reality. And in this area that we're talking about, sometimes what can happen is people can mistake fiction for the truth, for reality. And sometimes with good reason, because it's a good way of telling the truth, isn't it, fiction? Because it means you don't get into trouble as much, although Baby Reindeer might want to find out more about that. Yep. with their recent retelling of a story, who knows? But the point is, it seems deeply symbolic that we have the head of a monarch floating in a sea of blood around the time that, let me give you these comments from Andrew Bridgen to qualify where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
Right. So this is a quote from Doc Malik, Honest Health podcast. I've listened to it a couple of times. Interesting little piece. Rishi wants out, and we are actually at war with Russia now. They just haven't told you. We're actually at war with Russia now. I met with Andrei Kellen, the Russian ambassador in London, a couple of months ago, and he said that we know that your people are firing those Storm Shadow missiles at us out of Ukraine, because you couldn't train the Ukrainians to do it. We know you're doing it. Everybody knows. And he goes on to claim that this will be revealed in July or August. So we're at war now. It's already on, and it'll be announced July or August, according to that interview that he did. It's on his Twitter.
Yep. Well, what we'll do is we've got to take a headline. We've just got to take a brief 30-second headline break right now, okay? So we've got to take a little news headline break. When we come back at the other side of that, let's examine this and let's look up whether or not Europe is gearing up for war. And if it is, and if his statement proves to be true, we're not going to have to wait for too long before that's either confirmed as fact or it's dismissed as bunkum because July isn't too far away. So let's talk about the readiness of Europe or whether or not we are in an actual war at the minute, as per Bridgen, and see what comes out of that conversation. So we'll do that when we come back after this break here on TNT. Don't go away.
This news just in. TNT Radio News.
Ready? Go! Go! Go!
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. There are calls for new laws to be introduced in Australia to protect whistleblowers after a former military lawyer and one of our own contributors here at TNT was thrown in jail for exposing Australian war crimes. US Secretary of State Antony Blinken's been slammed online after he was spotted partying in a basement bar in Ukraine. And nearly 500,000 Palestinians are said to have fled Rafah as Israeli forces reportedly close in on the densely populated city.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Okay, Nick. Well, the question is then, is Europe gearing up for war? Are we already in war as per Bridgen's comments on that podcast that you referenced there? Well, without any shadow of a doubt, for the last 2 years, Europe has been, and NATO have been stoking the fires of war over in Ukraine. They're fighting a proxy war with Russia effectively on the Ukrainian soil. Look, they're not winning. They're not winning by any stretch of the imagination. There's a headline here to say more than 2 years into the war, Putin has doubled down. I would say it's us that's doubled down, if anybody. UK and European allies are stealing their economies and armed forces for war. So definitely the jungle drums are beating, or the war drums are certainly beating here. You know, we've talked about mobilization, about bringing back national service. The conscription age is going down and down, or should I say up and up in Ukraine. They're pulling progressively older men and women into the army because everybody else is being killed over there. So the argument could be made that we did effectively go to war by proxy with Ukraine 2 years ago. Are they talking about like a hard ground invasion in July that could literally trigger the end?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, obviously, whether or not we go to war in the time mentioned just before the break is a point of fact. So debating it goes either way, doesn't it? But what I'm interested in, and maybe you'll be able to give me sort of the business end answer of this, Rick, is in the subculture that I described when I started talking to you about Kerrang Radio and, you know, we were interviewing guests about time travel, shape-shifting reptiles and so on, all sorts of crazy things. Mm-hmm. It was fun and games, right?
Yeah.
But were there to be a war, what then does the alternative media do? What do you do? Because when I worked in media, it was mainstream media, it was broadcast media, and there were clear rules that when a war began in a different form of broadcasting, you, for reasons of national security, couldn't cover certain it. What would you do?
Well,
would your line change?
Well, no, it wouldn't, because the way I see it is at the minute, since the Ukraine war kicked off, the special military operation, if you want to call it that, with Russia going into Ukraine in February of 22, even from Israel-Palestine that kicked off on October the 7th last year, there's no direction for us to, all we do is cover facts, okay? What we believe is the truth, and that we know to be the truth, that's what we put out there. So I don't know if anybody, like, for example, RT News was banned in the UK and banned in Ireland as soon as the conflict kicked off. There was an IP ban put on them. You couldn't access RT News in Russia, for example, because they were Russian state media. They believed they were subverting the British public. We never eased off on our reporting on that one now. And as long as we have facts, that's what we will put forward. So, you know, if a war does kick off, if an actual hot war does kick off, it'll just be business as usual here, because we, by and large, we're not pro NATO, or we're not pro Russia for that matter. We're just calling a spade. So we're saying that Russia's Putin's no angel. But then again, neither is Joe Biden, and neither was Boris Johnson, and neither is Rishi Sunak, and neither is Emmanuel Macron, or neither is Vladimir Zelensky. The amount of lambasting those people have taken from us over the last few years is unreal, and justifiably so, because they're evil, wicked, money-grabbing, mass-murdering warmongers. So that's what we've always labelled them as. And if they do trot us into a war, I can't see that our narrative in that would change, Nick. You see the conspiracy theorist side of things too, where I stand on this personally, okay? What I do is I present what I believe to be factual information, and it's up to the listener, you or anybody else, to take it or leave it. If you don't believe a word I say, or you think everything I say is garbage, I do not invest any energy or any extra time to convince you that I am right. Some people are so tied up in knots trying to get people to believe what they believe in, they're effectively frittering their own lives away. They're going down these rabbit holes, and effectively they're not coming out of them with any rabbits. They're just coming out of them with dirt in their faces and dirt on their hands and feet. And I don't know. People argue about just about anything these days. Is the earth flat? Is it round? Is it donut shaped? Are there aliens? Are there not? Are lizards controlling the world? Are they manipulating the weather? The bottom line is, even if you have all the answers to this, or I do, what are you going to do about it? What am I going to do about it? We can't do anything about it per se, not directly, but what we can do is we can take control of our own lives. And I think a lot of this stuff is very much distraction from all sides to get us to deplete our energies and deplete our time and deplete our own resources when we should be focusing on our homes, on our families, on our own mental health, and taking care of our own business. That's the way I see it. I tend not to get too deep into it.
So if you allow me to come back on that, I mean, like you say, your home, family, your real life, that's the important stuff. And if you are perceived to be an enemy of the state who is, rounding up sedition, there will be legal consequences that would affect your home and your family and so on. And if you look at the precedents of the Second World War, what, like you say, I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that you'd be making things up, but if we're talking about the truth, the first casualty in war is the truth. And there's a reason for that. So, you know, if you had, there'd be a line, wouldn't there? Troop movements, for example, I guess you wouldn't go into if someone was ringing up from the front line saying they were there and they were supporting the truth and they wanted to tell you where all the troops were. You wouldn't, there are surely, obviously, some things you wouldn't report for reasons of national security, or am I wrong?
Well, I've never been in that position before. And if some dude phoned me up or some woman phoned me up and claimed to be in the front line somewhere, they're reporting truth, unless it was a legitimate source, you wouldn't even entertain a call like that. And here's the thing, listen, I can't stop. If someone wants to arrest me and frame me or lock me up for what I'm saying now, well, it's going to happen. I can't do anything about that, but I also can't remain silent. So the last job that I was in, for example, I worked for a part of a government organization, and I was very outspoken against the government, and I was very outspoken against, for example, the World Economic Forum. It turns out our new chief executive was a member of the World Economic Forum. So right. It was only a matter of time before I would have been hauled in and disciplined or kicked out. But this job here happened to come along at the same time that all this was happening. So I just quit and left. But I would have been prepared to have been sacked from there rather than be silenced by those people. So the question that you're asking is, we can all make great statements like, I'll do this to the death. I'll do this. I'll never fail. I'll never falter. I can't say that for sure because I have never been in that position. But as per now, what I'm doing at the minute, I'm doing it as genuinely as I possibly can. I'm not doing it with any back doors. And maybe the door will knock someday and they'll arrest me saying you're causing sedition, you're subverting people, and you're an enemy agent. At that point, what'll I do? I'll have to go in. I'll have to be questioned. And if they put me before a kangaroo court, I'll have to go to prison. And if they want to kill me, they can do that too. I won't be any different than anybody else in history that stood up for the truth or spoke out for the truth. Why should me, Rick Bunn, be any different? So again, I'll cross those bridges when I come to them. But as per now, it's just business as usual for me. I hope that answers your question.
I hope it doesn't happen. Let's hope that doesn't happen then, Rick. Yeah.
I hope not. I mean, I've been threatened in the past. My life has been threatened because of things that I've done, and I haven't backed down. I'm like, okay, whatever will be, will be. I've been in perilous situations because of my beliefs and because of my faith in the past. I haven't backed down. It's almost cost me my life. I haven't backed down. So I'm not saying that to be a tough guy. I'm just saying some things are more important, depending on whether or not you've got any faith or not either. I don't care what happens to me today. I could die before the end of this show. It won't faze me at all. I don't fear death, and I don't fear what man can do to me. So maybe that makes me a little bit more dangerous. I don't know, but I'm just saying that I can only speak for myself personally. So it's an interesting question that you posed to me, and I hope that has given a satisfactory answer. And I'd love to talk to you more. I think we're just getting warmed up here, but we've got to stop. We've got to take an ad break. Like I said, I've got another guest coming in. I'm not wriggling out of answering any more of your questions, but we're literally...
No worries, man.
In this one. But Nick, many, many thanks for hopping on this morning. It was a blast talking to you, and hopefully we'll get talking again sometime in the future. That's Nick Margerison. I'm Rick Munn, and I'll be back after this short break with Rex Patrick from Australia. So don't go away. Stay tuned for more here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Around here, bushfire is just a part of life. We've been through it before, and we'll get through it again. The people here all look out for each other. We're a community that does its bit to plan and prepare to keep everyone safe. We live with bushfire, so we live bushfire ready.
You're with Rick Munn
on Today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
Yes, indeed. TNT, Today's News Talk. It's Wednesday, the 15th of May, 2024. I'm very happy to be joined on here for the first time on Locked and Loaded anyway by Mr. Rex Patrick. Rex is also known as the Transparency Warrior. I like it. Very snappy title. He's a former independent senator for South Australia, small business owner, project manager, and he also describes himself as a submariner. You're not a fish, are you? I'm hoping you haven't resorted to life underwater in Atlantis. You're still on dry land, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And good morning to your listeners. Look, I am a former submariner. So if I twitch a little bit throughout the show, that's the reason why. I did the psychological exam to get into submarines, and I failed, and therefore I was accepted.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to have you on the show today. Anyway, Rex, former politician in the Senate as well, independent senator. I know you fought for a long time for the people of South Australia. Now we need to turn our attention towards a chap we both know quite well, none other than David McBride. I don't know. I've never met him personally, but I've spoke to him many times on the show here over the last 2 years. I've been in contact with him personally as well. I love the guy to bits. He's a kindred spirit. I like very much where he's coming from. I was gutted yesterday. I know I'm in Ireland, but genuinely, I was gutted yesterday whenever the ruling came down in that court and that judge pronounced a 5-year, 8-month sentence for stealing government information and spreading it around and maybe endangering lives. What a load of bunkum.
Yeah, look, I was in the courtroom. I flew to Canberra and I sat and listened to the judgment, and I walked away stunned and speechless. He was given a sentence that I think exceeded even the expectations of the prosecution. Now, David McBride is a former serving military officer. He has no criminal record prior to the charge that he was put up on. He acted in what he thought was the public interest. He didn't harm anyone. He didn't gain from what he did. In fact, suffered immeasurably because of it. And he's not a risk to the public. And yet he's now been put in jail for over 5 years, almost 6 years, with a non-parole period of over 2 years.
It's I read the accounts from the court yesterday. I spent a lot of last night, you know, trying to catch up on as much details of this, the proceedings yesterday, as I could get. So I know when he went into the court, this is going to sound really weird, but the one thing that I was thinking about was that dog of his that he has, Jake. You know, David suffered a lot from PTSD after his time in the army. He's got his life. He became very physically fit. He put his time back into boxing again. I know about that. That dog was his life, and he went into court with that dog, and it was a support dog. You know, it was to help him to cope, and he loved that thing. And the worst part about all this, even worse than the actual sentencing itself for me yesterday when I read that, was they said when the judgment was pronounced, some woman came along and took the lead, and he was frog marched off by three cops towards the cells, and he just turned around and just said Jake, and his two daughters couldn't even have been in the court. To me, man, that's just wicked. That's just it's wicked. What they've done in that man. Never mind, it's injustice. It's wicked.
Yeah, look, it's very, very sad. And look, you know, you read through the judgment, and one of the big problems that we have with whistleblowers is that when someone blows the whistle, and I'll just use a simpler example, because there's another whistleblower that's going to follow David, who basically was involved in our tax office. The tax office was chasing debts, and they had a power to garnish money from bank accounts of businesses that weren't paying tax. And no one disputed that they didn't have the power, but they were using it in an egregious manner. And in order to blow the whistle on that fact, because it was harming people, he photocopied some documents. And it turns out if you photocopy or take photographs of taxpayers' information, that's an offence. Now, no one has suggested that this gentleman, his name's Richard Boyle, that he in any way used information other than to formulate his disclosure. So he photocopied the documents to make sure that he was doing the right thing, had all the right evidence, and it was the act of the photocopying that brought him undone. In fact, he also sent documents to his lawyer, and because he wasn't seeking legal advice, he just sent them to his lawyer and said, if I get into trouble, can you just keep these documents and we can utilise them at some later stage. Even that was found to be an offence and not protected by client-lawyer privilege. But it just illustrates the point that he wasn't allowed to use the Public Interest Disclosure Act as a defence in relation to that, because the judge said, well, you've committed a crime. And if the judge was faced with someone who broke into someone's house to then collect information to do a public interest disclosure, you might say, well, that's gone a bit far. Where do you draw the line? And so the court just says, have you broken the law? And it's a bit like saying we're going to if someone has jaywalked across the road to help a child and they get pulled into a courtroom for jaywalking, and the court will focus on the jaywalking. And that's exactly what's happened with David McBride. He's blown the whistle and he's made some mistakes along the way. You know, he's committed unlawful acts along the way, and the court has focused on that. Now, in Australia, like you have in the United Kingdom, the king has a prerogative power. Our attorney has a prerogative power to it's a power that's given to him now by an act of parliament. So the parliament has said, your job as the attorney general is to look out for cases where it's not in the public interest to prosecute. You can look at a case like David McBride's case and say, look, he's done some things that were wrong, but no one doubts that he was of the view he was doing the right thing. He ended up, you know, disclosing some abhorrent conduct in Afghanistan by a small cohort of Australian special forces personnel. But there is no public interest in prosecuting him, because the message that yesterday's prosecution sent to everyone in the Australian public service is, do not dare to blow the whistle. You know, right now we have 80, 90,000 policemen and women silently sitting inside the offices of the government. And if they see something wrong, they can call that out. That's a huge deterrent for things going wrong in the first place, but they can call it out. But do you think anyone in Australia, after what happened to David yesterday, would blow the whistle? And that's the thing the Attorney General has missed here. And indeed, the court missed it. The court said in its judgment, Justice Mossop said, I've got to basically make sure we deter people from ever releasing classified information, without giving even a thought to the idea of the chilling effect of his jailing and what that will do to public interest disclosures right across our country.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, it was to send a message out there. And there was a post that Stella Assange put up yesterday. There's a picture of her and David standing together. Scandalous news, she says, from Australia. David McBride, who shared documents evidencing impunity over ADF war crimes in Afghanistan with the press, has been sentenced. And we know the sentence. The only person going to prison over the war crimes is the man who blew the whistle. Earliest release date, 13th of August, 2026. Isn't it ridiculous that in a war crime setting, that the person that's going to jail and serving years, minimum years for this, is the person exposing the war crimes? What does that say about Australia? What does that say about the United Kingdom? What does that say about us in general, if that's the law?
Yeah, look, I can't comment on your jurisdictions, but what I can say, and I say this as a former senator and someone who works in the integrity space, and that is that this decision is a stain on the governance and justice system here in Australia.
Without a doubt, and I hope it's not an indelible stain, because obviously this is just post-judgment, post-sentencing. Yesterday was a crazy day. It's like, you know, metaphor, figuratively speaking, a bomb has gone off. Everything's up in the air. The debris today is just starting to fall to the ground. So obviously, this has been a shock outcome for so many people, not least of which David McBride. However, it's not over until the fat lady sings. So obviously there's appeal processes that can be followed in this, Rex. So I want to get your views on what the possible outcomes of appeal could be, or is there a case this could be overturned? Could public sympathy, or if there was campaigns launched from the public speaking out about this and it just won't go away, is there a chance that we could pressurize the government into overturning this and getting them back out on the streets again?
Yeah, look, I'm the founder of an organisation called the Whistleblower Justice Fund, and through donations, we've spent some in the order of $500,000 here in Australia just over the last 6 months, bringing to the attention of the Australian public the value of whistleblowers and the awful situation that David McBride is and Richard Boyle is in, where they're being persecuted by the government for doing the right thing. So there is a lot of public support. You know, yesterday when I tweeted the sentence from the courtroom, I have about 40,000 followers, but there were 250,000 impressions caused by that tweet, which is probably the biggest tweet I've ever done. There's a lot of interest in this. Now, the Prime Minister today was asked about it and refused to comment on the basis that there might be an appeal. Unfortunately, the courts, maybe it's a case of fortunately, the courts probably, they don't pay attention to public opinion. They tend to focus on evidence that is brought before the court and the law. Look, there is probably a couple of avenues of appeal. One of them, Mark Davis, who is David McBride's lawyer mentioned outside the court that they may appeal on the duty issue. So the idea is that David was felt duty bound to the Australian public to uphold a high standard and call out something that was going wrong, perhaps in opposition to his orders. And there's some very strong court cases here going back to 1926, I think, in that High Court, that just makes it very clear that people are not required to, in the military, are not required to obey orders, just lawful orders. An officer can't order someone to do something that is unlawful. So one of the avenues of appeal will likely focus on the issue of duty. But another appeal, and I don't want to speak for the lawyers, but I imagine they'll be considering the severity of the sentencing that's occurred here. As I mentioned before, this is a guy, he served his country. He was of the view he was doing the right thing. He disclosed abhorrent conduct. He did it without any reward, any expectation of a reward. He has not caused any harm. He's not a risk to the public. You know, that's getting a 5 or almost 6 year sentence. Yeah, and again, as you mentioned, Rick, he's a guy who's when he was going about this, he was suffering from PTSD. Yeah. So the way in which he conducted his affairs may well have been affected by that PTSD, by the fact he was using alcohol, he was using prescription drugs. Now, he's in a much, much better place, but at the time that the offences occurred, that was the situation that he was in. And again, so it seems awfully harsh for that to be for him to find himself in the situation that he's in those circumstances.
You know, I read the statement or the judge's statement on all the factors that were considered when it came to the sentencing. So, you know, he tipped his hat to David McBride's exemplary character. He realized he wasn't in this for fame or money. He wasn't trying to endanger Australian lives. He acknowledged that, yes, the PTSD and the alcohol at the time may have played a part in it, but not that much of a part. He tried to play that down a lot. But one thing that judge zoomed in on, he says, you know, there's no remorse. There's no remorse from Mr. McBride. He's not sorry for what he did. He's not repentant in any way for what he did. He still thinks he did the right thing. And effectively then he said, well, I'm going to teach him a lesson. Have 5 years and 8 months, Mr. McBride. Sick. I'm disgusted. I can't. And I'm not saying that to be dramatic. The whole thing has disgusted me and put me in bad twist for the last 24 hours. And if that's what it's doing to me, how much more so to David McBride and his family right now?
You've picked up very astutely something that I felt when I walked away from the court. You know, at the end of the day, to be a whistleblower, you can't be the sort of person that likes to sit in the sort of corner of the room and just go with the flow. You have to have a certain sort of fortitude about you. Mm. And, you know, that's the Justice Mossop not understanding how whistleblowers think. I've met lots and lots of whistleblowers, and it takes a very special character for someone to stand up in a David versus Goliath situation and say, I'm going to do the right thing. Most people will just sit there and say, you know what, it's not my role, I'm not up for this, I don't want to do this. And David has that fortitude, he has that courage, and that's the very thing that makes a whistleblower. So I too picked up on that and was disappointed at that particular angle that was pressed by Justice Mossop.
It was, because they almost wanted him to, apologize profusely for what he had done, as if he had done anything. But of course, that's what he believed in with all his heart and soul. And he was prepared for this outcome, not the outcome that he wanted, but he was prepared to see it through, because that's the kind of man that he has. He's got honor and he's got integrity, which is a hell of a lot more than we can say for some of these people that are rolling around in the judiciary. That's just my opinion on it. Anyway, Rex, we're out of time on this one this morning. I really want to appreciate you coming on and lending your views on this, and of course you were there yesterday physically in the courtroom, so you can testify to this
firsthand what you saw and heard yesterday, Mr. Rex Patrick. Follow him on the X platform at Mr. Rex Patrick, or check out his website, transparencywarrior.com.au. Lovely to talk to you. Maybe get talking to you again sooner rather than later, because this case ain't going away, and neither are we, and neither is David McBride. So big thanks to you, Rex. We've got to get off now, take a news break. I'll be back at the other side with more guests here on TNT. Don't go away. We'll be right back.